forget to make your silly underdog picks, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Pick three college underdog teams you think will win before the weekend college football games begin. To sign up, make your picks, visit thegamenashville.com. I have no idea what Julian's doing with the music, but I just can't help but
You don't
dance.
Like short skirts and long jackets?
No, I just I don't know the theme yet, but I know that I'm enjoying
fat bass lines.
You should never say that again.
Why? It was a great bass line.
Yes,
I love
yes,
that song.
It's just fat bass lines.
What do they call it in the music industry?
Well, I don't, you know, I'm not saying that that's incorrect. I'm just saying that delivered
me,
from either of
okay,
us, like
fine,
fat bass lines. Like right now, Mike Golick Jr. from ESPN is rolling his eyes. I can feel it through the phone. Gojo, we're going to start with some hard-hitting analysis here because the Nashville Predators hockey guy, I know you love hockey, but trust me, we're not going to put you on a hockey island here. But the Predators have two different promotions. One is a Big Mac goal if you score in the last 5 minutes of a period. And the second is when they score four goals in a game, you get a Frosty. So last night, both were accomplished, both the Big Mac and the Frosty. So if you had to choose between the Big Mac and the Frosty, luckily the Preds give you both. But if you had to choose between the two, are you a Big Mac or Frosty guy?
I'm generally a Frosty guy. Obviously, the Big Mac's great. I think it's comparatively the lesser of a lot of the burger choices you can get. At McDonald's, the Frosty's the pinnacle. Like, it's such a unique dessert that operates in the fast food industry that anytime you can Frosty, you do Frosty.
There's only one answer to this that won't cause you and I to get in a fist fight. Favorite Frosty flavor?
Oh, chocolate.
Okay, good.
Okay, good.
We're
all
still
right.
Friends.
You may continue to be on the show.
Yeah, no, oh no, we only acknowledge one Frosty flavor around here. That vanilla crowd can beat it.
Yep.
Well, that's riveting. That's really all we know. So I want to get your thoughts, obviously, on all things Tennessee and all things Vols, because we haven't had the chance to talk to you since last weekend's loss. When you look at this point at the Tennessee football program, is there any advantage right now in your mind to making a coaching change today?
No, this is one of those things that, unless you're trying to send a message to, you know, recruits and things like that, most everyone understands the general picture of things as we wind down for this season. And in general, I'm kind of against the idea of cutting bait in the middle of the season, just because, I mean, if nothing else, maybe for the sake of the kids still on the roster right now and the seniors, you don't want to completely throw away what they are a part of, and in general that can happen. But man, at some point you gotta, and this is on the athletic director and the people close to this program, really weigh in and take the temperature of that locker room yourselves, forgetting, you know, whether Butch, you know, feels he's lost it himself or not, is take the temperature and see if this team is just checked out, because at some point you do owe this bit of service to the kids that you actually have on scholarship, whose job it is to go out here and play. Now, I always rebuke the idea that you're going to go out there and play better if you're a kid all of a sudden once some interim coach is put in, if you had some disagreement with Butch, because you need to have that personal pride in and of itself. But in general, I'm not a fan of making the change midseason. I would much rather play this thing out to the end and then make the change necessary that you have to, which it seems like we're getting closer and closer to that certainty there at Tennessee.
So I was we've talked about this on the show. They got Alabama obviously coming up this weekend, five touchdown favorite essentially. And I was talking to Tom Luganville last night, and I asked him. I said, and you know, we talked about this on the show. When's the last time you watched a full Alabama game or needed to watch a full Alabama game? And I haven't heard an answer other than Clemson national championship game yet. When's the last time you watched a full Bama game?
That would probably be it. I mean, I know we got the rat poison lecture from Nick Saban the other weekend about how they're not all going to be 60-plus point wins, but it certainly feels like it during the regular season. And we know and become accustomed to Alabama dropping some game along the course of the season. Texas A&M really gave them a hell of a fight, I thought, the other week, and seemed to match them in a lot of areas that most other people just can't along the way, and have that mobile quarterback aspect that certainly has been Alabama kryptonite in years past. But it just really isn't. I mean, you understand Alabama, in a world of college football where consistency is probably the hardest thing to come by, have been the most consistent product for the better part of a decade now. And that's Nick Saban, and that's those kids kind of understanding and just being able to constantly reinforce what their identity is, regardless of the pieces involved. And so, now, when you know the product is as consistent as it is, even after the tweaks with Jalen Hurts being a quarterback that's a little bit of a different mold than most Alabama quarterbacks we've seen. And why am I going to waste time watching into the second half unless I want to get a head start scouting the Alabama team for the next 2 years, looking at the five stars that they've got coming off the bench that are redshirt freshmen now.
We're talking to Mike Golic Jr.
I'm actually working on my predictions for 2019 right now.
Yeah, so get an early look at the national title squad for that year.
I think it's interesting because you took part in the sort of the mock selection committee process last year, year before. I know that you've taken part in that in the past. Give everybody a little bit of an insight on what that is like when you're actually in the room trying to argue over who belongs in the playoff.
Yeah, so it's interesting as we all think about it in terms of, you know, that top four and trying to just argue for that group and almost sort it out from there. But really the weird thing I found out was you basically, for the first portion, especially for the first nine teams, operate in groups of three where you're trying to vote in based on, all right, you know, who do we think are the best? You know, first you whittle it down to a number of six, and then you're voting, and all the votes, you know, they start off, it's an individual vote, they tabulate it together, and then it spits out your top three teams from that point on. And that's why, you know, when we see the rankings come out in the fall, you always get the top four and then the first two out, because it eventually ends up being group of three and group of three. So you get the top six before you voted on anything else. And that's why those first two out are phrased the way they are in the voting. And so it becomes interesting because you learn a lot about certainly what goes into the voting, and you realize everyone's got their process. Everyone takes it very seriously. So the idea of there being, you know, agendas on the individual part can be a bit misleading. But I think the one thing I came away from more than anything is understanding the power of charisma in that room can still be a very real thing. And when you've got some big personalities, some of the biggest names from college football that have been coaches, that have gone on to be administrators, and you can see that if someone's got a persuasive argument for a team, that can go through the room, because one thing is certain, that if people don't agree on the voting as it's come out, you can re-vote and you can choose to re-vote until you get this right. It's an arduous process that ends up really testing everyone's patience, certainly, but it drives home just how complicated this is and how I think earnest people are in trying to figure this out. But make no mistake about it, you can sway the room if you are a powerful enough voice in there and have a good enough argument. So it's everything that people want out of a human committee. When they ask for it, they really got it, and we seem to, you know, buck back at that at certain times, but it is everything that people have desired.
Yeah, it's real interesting. I'd like to know who the biggest, most influential voices are in the actual committee room. I think that would be interesting to find out, and we know some of the more powerful personalities that are in that room. But for you, and this goes for the committee as well, beauty sort of in the eye of the beholder. All of these things are considered, whether it's strength of schedule, statistical analysis, who you played, eye test, recruiting, talent, coaching. I mean, everything is taken into account, where you played, when you played, all that stuff. You look at, like, for example, TCU right now might have a better resume than Georgia and Penn State and Ohio State, but I don't know anyone who would pick TCU to win a game head-to-head against those three teams. So then it becomes, who do you think's better? What do you value when you try to evaluate teams? Do you just strictly look at resume? Do you look at who do you think would win on a neutral field? Like, how do you go through that process?
I think it has to be a little bit of everything, right? Like, you have these unique tools that are at your disposal as part of the playoff committee. Like, one thing they do is they do a good job of having a ton of deep statistics and give you the ability to put them side by side. So I could put TCU up next to Georgia, and I could see all of the places statistically over the course of the season that these teams have matched up, where they're comparable, where someone has the edge. They kind of give you statistics that are going to be a little bit more universal and relevant than just some of the raw stats that at times don't paint the most clear picture. But at the same time, one thing they also drive home too is you need to be watching the games, because at some point being able to see and be cognizant of, all right, you know, who was injured during this portion of the season? You know, we remember the game for Penn State last year when they played against Michigan. I think they were missing, you know, all three of their starting linebackers at that point. So you factor those things in anytime that comes up. And just being able to see these teams on tape, understanding the matchups that are going to come up, understanding the things that led to certain outcomes in the game, I think those are all really important. And that's done to minimize some of the impact of something that Chris Peterson talked about, which can be exposure for certain teams, like some of our Pac-12 squads that may not always be on TV at a time of day when the general consumer and the general population of college football can see and identify these people. But the committee, and I can just tell you from, again, going through it, where we were mocking a year that had already come to pass where we weren't going to affect anyone's ability to go and reach the postseason, it still ends up taking on a lot of gravity because you have pride in what you do, and we're going back and trying to remember and pick at our memories with a fine-tooth comb all of the things that happened that season. So the people actually going through this are pouring over a lot of this painstakingly. So I think it's got to be some sort of picture of all of them, and I'm sure, like anything else, you get a lot of the old-school football guys in there that are probably going to say that they're going to go on the off-the-eye test more than anything. I remember that coming up a fair amount. There are going to be some people that are going to try and measure it out, and I think that's the beauty of having the mixed bag on the committee is you get all of those perspective reference simultaneously side-by-side and then try and make the best pick off of all of them.
It's fantastic stuff, guys. You can follow him on Twitter at mgolickjr57. Mike Golick Jr., man, we appreciate the time. Thanks as always, my friend.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Great stuff from Mike. You can hear Mike, obviously, on First and Last on these very airwaves hanging out before we come on every single morning. Great stuff from Mike. He dove into the process a little bit, and there are some crazy playoff scenarios out there that involve the SEC. So that's why we asked him about it. We need to talk a little bit about what he just gave us and sort of figure out if it's right. Is the playoff committee set up in the right way? Because it could impact some of your favorite SEC teams. We'll tell you what we mean. We'll break it down. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.